Hey guys, it's Long Tran for Yanko Design Podcast Edition. This is our first episode. How exciting is that? I have the opportunity to sit down with Mark Sanders, the incredible designer of the IF Mode bike, who graciously answered a few of our questions about the bike and about what inspires him as a designer. So I hope you guys enjoy it. So first, thank you for giving me the opportunity to interview you. And big congrats about the IF Mode bike. I see that it's making big buzz across the internet and publications. It seems like everybody really, really likes it.
Excellent. Yeah. No, it's getting a lot of web time at the moment.
Yeah.
It's great.
I have to tell you, I love that bike. It's actually one of the first folding bikes that I've seen in a long while. There's a couple others, but specifically that one, just because of the folding mechanism and how the wheel, you don't have to take off the front wheel to fold it and you know, whatnot. I love that bike. I've been trying to get Laura to send me one to review for like the longest now. And she keeps telling me to like, it's not out yet. I'll just wait a minute. So kudos on you for such a fantastic design.
That's really kind of you. Yeah. They're shipping out demo like beta bikes at the moment, I guess fairly soon they'll be shipping out the full production ones.
Right.
But demand has been amazing from around the world, and Pacific tend to concentrate in Asia where they're based, and sort of get bikes there out there first,
right,
because they're nearer to home.
So are they're not launching worldwide around the same time? They're coming out in Asia first, and then, or do you know what?
They're going out in Asia first. I think a couple of places like Taiwan, Singapore, maybe Korea have got them, and then they're rolling them out in the US a bit later.
Do you know if it's this year?
I'm not party to all the distributor.
Oh, okay.
Decisions and things like that.
Right.
I'm on as a designer, you know.
Right. So let's just get on with the interview. I don't want to like hold you up too much. So first, why don't you tell me a little bit about you? I mean, I know a lot about you already, but just for our readers, when did you know you wanted to become a designer?
Oh, forever. I mean, like since I was a kid, I was always making things like most designers were. You know, I just love making things both mechanically and also trying to make them look good as well. So, it was always on the cards. I particularly fancied being an inventor. That sort of attracted me as a little kid. I didn't know what one was, but it certainly was attractive.
Really? Okay, so I know when I was a kid, I kind of thought I wanted to be an architect. So I would draw these, when I look back on it, these horrific houses I thought people would love.
Yeah.
What were some of the things that you were doing as a kid then?
I was building, I call them, model aeroplanes.
Right.
And the usual thing was you spend all week building it up and, with all the balsa wood, take it out the weekend, trash it in the first attempt, take it back in a bin bag, and then repeat every week. So you sure got good at building things,
Right. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I know that cycle very well. That's interesting. So this sort of skips ahead. If you weren't a designer, if you weren't doing what you were doing today, what other occupation do you think you'd be in?
That's a good question. Very good question. I'd either be an engineer or an artist.
Okay.
Probably a sculptor or an engineer if I wasn't a designer, yeah.
Wow, okay. Cool. So I know a little bit. I know a lot about actually of the other things you worked on. You have work across the broad spectrum of ID, but you're sort of known as sort of the folding man because of your bikes, because of the Strida and things that. Why bikes? Like, what's your sort? Why are you drawn to them specifically? Personal transport?
Well, funny enough, when I first started on bikes, I was actually a petrolhead. You know,
yeah.
I used to ride a bike as a kid. Obviously, before you can drive a car, but after that, I really got into cars when I was sort of like 18.
Which is 20. Normal.
yeah, you know, and it was the way to try and impress girls and things like that.
Right.
and it was only, you know, when I was. I went back to college at the ripe old mature age of 23, or I can't remember, 24-ish, and that was giving up a good job to go back to college. And it was a 25-mile commute, and so I tried to drive it. Of course, got stuck in traffic jams, bust it, same traffic jams. Train was fine, but there's a huge great walk at either end.
Right.
Motorbike was too dangerous, and a bicycle, I could actually ride it, but it was totally knackering, and you then smell, you know.
Right.
so that journey actually made me think about folding bikes in particular, because I didn't want to ride the whole way, and I thought, you know, the train would be fine if it only went door to door, and it didn't.
Right.
And you know, we're going back into the, you know, mid to late 80s, and there were only a few folding bikes around, and they were sort of not particularly attractive. They're functional, but not particularly attractive. So the project
right.
sort of suggested itself.
So, do you ride bikes now, or are you?
Yeah, I've flipped completely. Hardly touch cars, is it? Obviously got a car to move stuff around, but I use a bike for just everything.
Is it a bike you designed, or...?
Yeah, and there's always a bike that needs testing. You know, at the moment, I'm trying to break an IF mode, you know, by doing things to it that it shouldn't be done with, like taking it downhill and off-road and jumping curbs and all the things that shouldn't be done, but you know someone's going to do.
Right.
I feel that,
and it's holding up well?
I prefer to break the neck on it, you know?
Yeah, is it holding up well?
It's holding up really well, actually. Yeah.
How long have you been working on the IF mode? Like, when did the conception start?
The actual IF mode, funny enough, I've been working on for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it came about because I was, obviously, through the Strider project, which has been going about 20 years now, I'm really into the folding bike world generally. And
right.
I'm totally behind the concept of folding bikes, you know, something that links the last, you know, mile to the station and, you know, personal transport you can actually take with you rather than leave somewhere.
Right.
But the realization was that most folding bikes have small wheels, and there were a few larger folding bikes, but usually have to take something off them, or they're a bit cumbersome.
Yes.
And I thought, that is where, that would be so interesting to look at that area. And when you go, I mean, if you go and watch, I mean, for me it's in London, but most big cities where bikes are used, 95% are big wheel bikes. You know, people, that's what the man in the street's choice is, a
mm-hmm.
big wheel bike.
Yeah.
But being so committed to folding bikes, I was on this sort of mission, and I thought it was a niche market that could we make a full-size wheel bike that would be as useful and practical as a small wheel ultra-portable bike? And that was the sort of thinking behind the project.
Is that why the IF mode is so, I mean, just visually and mechanically, it looks like it's so different from the Strider? Were you trying to make it intentionally more accessible to the consumer?
Exactly, yeah. I felt that, you know, that a lot of people never actually get to try the Strider because they just think, oh, no way I'm going to ride that weird bike.
Right.
and I suppose I was in a bit of reaction to that sort of criticism, that I wanted to make something fairly conventional. Certainly all the contact points are totally conventional. You know, you see pedals and hand
yeah.
grips and things. And also wanted to make something that might appeal to everybody rather than just sort of, you know, real out-and-out bike enthusiasts.
Right. And I noticed one thing I But one of the things that I really love about the IF mode bike is how insanely easy it is to fold. I watched this video, I don't know if it was you or somebody else, flipping this latch, the bike's just sort of collapsed in on itself, the wheels sort of fold parallel next to each other, and like that was it. That was amazing. I've never seen something fold so simply for a bike. That was incredible. What were like some of the other design challenges? Because that could have, you must have been up a late nights just trying to figure that bit out. I mean, I don't know. Oh. What were some of the other design challenges?
I must admit that was sort of like a, it did take, you know, months and months of fiddling around with little tiny wire models, right, the CAD system, and wooden models just to get that action right. But the trouble was getting the action right and also having all the geometry in the right place so that it was a regular bike. But,
yeah.
Me and the guy I was working with at the time, when we got it together and found it folded in one action, because originally, funny enough, it was you had to fold the steering 280 degrees and then fold it.
Right.
And then it was only making a full-size model and playing with it, they realized, hey, you can do it in one action. You don't need to do this twisting and the steering.
Right.
And so playing on the CAD system was actually, you know, not as good as playing with a physical model.
Right. Well, it's incredible. It sort of after seeing that, it sort of convinced me myself that I was going to buy a bike.
Because
I live kind of in a small flat and I have way too much stuff already, you know, stuff I probably should get rid of. And I want a bike. I live in LA. It's horrific traffic. I sort of live close enough to the office where I should possibly be riding a bike just to save myself, you know, a headache and save gas and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But it's just, I never had the space to put a bike in my house. So I think it's like perfect for people like me who just need the compactness without having to, like you said, go down to a bike that they're maybe not familiar or uncomfortable with, the small wheels or the smaller frame, the stranger A-frame that they're not used to seeing. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's, you know, you're perfect target audience.
Right.
Design aware, but lacking space maybe, and wanting, I mean, is theft a problem for you? Would theft be a problem? Leaving your bike outside, chained up, would it be nicked?
It's sort of a mental thing. I'm always thinking to myself, I leave an open invitation out to anyone if I chain my bike up for it to get stolen or vandalized.
Yeah.
Especially if a bike looks like an IF mode, I'm almost 100% certain somebody will look at it and be like, that looks like a bike I want because I've never seen anything like it before. So it would definitely, yeah, I would want to keep it inside the home with me to store it.
Yeah, well, it's nice and clean. There's no oily bit. So, you know, apart from getting it covered in mud, it should be clean and keep it indoors without any stains anywhere.
Right. And you know, that brings up a the way it looks. I was looking at some high-res photos of the bike and it looks quite luxurious. Did you design every aspect of the bike, like the seat, the handlebars and the materials?
Yeah, in fact the color scheme and putting the leather grips on and the leather seat, that was all from Pacific and the, you know, building a bike like this, it's obviously not just a one-man job. I did the basic design and then worked with Pacific, getting the details right. And their chief designer, Ryan Carroll, who's also an American guy, designs a lot of mountain bikes, you know, he's put a lot of himself in this product as well. For example, he designed the wheels. Uh-huh. He designed the internal chain drive and a very clever trick-free wheel in the back, which allows you to sort of wheel it forward and backwards without the free wheel kicking in.
Oh, I didn't know. That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, a Strider has a similar sort of folded shape, sort of long, well, Strider's a bit longer, actually, sort of long and thin, like a stick with a wheel at the end.
Right.
On a Strider, you can only push it forward because of a free wheel.
Right.
And if you don't know that, you try and drag it and the wheels sort of lock up. But what Ryan has put into the hub of this bike, the IF mode, is a special bi-directional free wheel, which is wickedly clever because it means that when you pedal, you just pedal like a normal bike, but you can actually push it forwards and backwards and the pedals don't move.
That's amazing.
Whereas on a regular bike, when you push a bike back up, the pedals go backwards.
Right, that's amazing. I wouldn't know that just from looking at the pictures, but that's actually very, very clever.
Yeah, well, the idea is, you know, it's basically a pair of wheels, when it's folded, it's a pair of wheels close together, so it's effectively one wheel with a handle. So you don't actually carry the weight, you use the handle to wheel your single bike wheel around. That's the sort of, you know, give you an idea of the folded shape.
I love that. That is so ingenious. I just want to piggyback off one of my earlier questions. I don't know if it seems like to you, but from the outside looking in, it seems like, especially in the last, I'd say 5 years, I've been seeing a lot more bike concepts popping up.
Yeah.
I don't know if you agree or not, but why do you think there's like this sudden interest in bikes again?
I think bikes are getting to a tipping point of becoming, I suppose, interesting to everybody. I mean, 10, 15, or 20 years ago, bikes were up for people that basically couldn't afford a car.
Right.
Or for out-and-out enthusiasts. And I think, you know, people are seeing bikes now as a useful tool for, you know, classless, whatever income or society you're in, a bike's just a useful bit of kit. And so, also everybody knows what a bike is, and it seemed to be something that is ripe for redesign, familiarity.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing here that I would guess that is the reason we've seen a lot of new bike designs. I would hope it's also because there's a sort of the mountain bike revolution in the sort of late 80s, early 90s released a whole new change of bike designs, because before that they're all just diamond frames, and that was due to the cycling committees around the world. So,
right. You
know, the racing bikes had to be all the same shape.
Right.
And it was like the mountain bikes that broke that mold, and it sort of freed up all this creativity that was pent up to design bikes.
Right. So do you think...
that's my theory anyway.
No, I totally agree. I think it's true. Do you think that because of that, do you think, especially in the industrial parts of the world, do you think personal transport is shifting back towards the bicycle? We'll see like this huge paradigm shift, or do you think it'll stay sort of niche where it's been for a while?
Well, I think the bicycle industry needs to get its act together. At the moment, the bicycle industry just concentrates on the low-hanging fruit, which is basically the enthusiast cyclist, generally male cyclist, and generally the sort of person that, you know, puts on spandex or lycra before they go for a ride. And the trouble is, that actually puts off the other 80% of the population.
Uh-huh.
Because regular people don't want to dress like that. They just want to wear the regular clothes. And I think the bike industry is only just waking up to those facts. And I can't blame them in a way because, you know, that's where their money is. But I think it's a bit short-term because if they're concentrated on the other 80% of the population that just want to wear regular clothes and use a bike to get around, like in, you know, Amsterdam and Holland and Denmark, they build a different bike. You know, it wouldn't be all cramped, lean forward for racing. It would be much more upright and clothes friendly.
I agree. Do you think, what do you think about electric bikes?
I think they're cool, actually. I think they're particularly good where it's hilly. I think they're a bit of a waste of time if it's flat, because it takes the same energy as walking to ride a bike on the flat, and you go four times as fast and four times the distance. But I can understand if people are a bit out of shape and they need to get up a steep hill. One thing that puts everybody off cycling is sweating. You know, arriving at your office or wherever you're going and you're covered in sweat. I mean, that's just not cool. So in that situation, I think an electric bike is really good. I'm still concerned about the technology because, you know, there's still so much to go wrong on an electric bike. It's not that simple yet. You know, the batteries are still in an early stage of development and people have got to remember to charge them right and all this sort of thing. Whereas a bike is just so wonderfully and simple. You just sit on it and pedal and that's it.
Is the electric bike... I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's about it.
Is the electric bike something you'd want to get into, or?
Funny enough, actually, the IF mode is ripe to be converted into an electric bike.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, yeah, because it's got all the space for the batteries already, and, you know, but I think that's something that Pacific may be looking at in the future. They're already into electric bikes. They already make the sister bike to this, the IF Reach, which is the smaller wheel version with a more conventional frame and full suspension. Right. That's already got an electric version of it.
So a possibility, but someone is mulling around the idea of an electrified IF mode that's foldable. That'd be amazing.
There's already an electrified IF Reach. They've just started making it. I think it's already on their website, on the Pacific website. It's got something called IF Reach DC or something. Let me just have a quick look.
Oh, yeah, I need to check that out.
Here we are, yeah. It's called Reach DC.
Reach DC. I need to
check that out. Is basically the it uses the same folding mechanism as the IF mold, but on a conventional frame.
Yeah.
Well, I said conventional frame. This is actually a really trick frame. It's a full suspension, a 20-inch bike, so it's a very clever frame. And what they've done is they've put an electric motor as well. So this has the features that when it's folded, you don't have to carry it. You can wheel it along, which... when you think, you know, there's all the extra weight of the battery in the motor, that's really good because...
yeah, exactly.
Damn heavy.
Yeah.
So it really needs that feature of, you know, never carry, just roll it along when it's folded. And that goes like stink. I've only tried it indoors at the Taipei show earlier this year, and... wow, does it move in silence?
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And they also do, they do a little tiny bike with tiny little wheels called it's on here as well, the Carry Me DC. And they put electric motor in that as well. And that bike is actually, it doesn't appeal to the sort of people that like full-size wheels. But if you can get over the fact that it's got tiny little wheels, you know, a bit like the Strider, it's a really clever little bike.
Actually, you just brought up an interesting point. What's the differences? What's the advantage versus disadvantage of the small wheel versus the full-size wheel that people are used to seeing?
The only disadvantage is if you're either off-road or going over roads that are really full of potholes. Because there's more chance of a small wheel bike getting caught up in a pothole than a large wheel bike. In fact, I've tried it on tiny, you know, I've tried riding over test potholes on tiny little wheel bikes, and in fact, they do actually go over them fine. It's just that you're more scared than if you're going over the same pothole with a large wheel bike.
Right.
You know, they just drop down the hole a bit more, but. You know, you still get over them. There are very few potholes that are deeper than the axle of the bike.
Right. So it's just sort of more of a mental thing. It's not really a functional.
It is. It really. I mean, the rolling resistance is slightly less on a small wheel bike, but it's you know under 5% difference for the tiniest wheel to the largest wheel, and it's mainly perception and. a lot of people, you know, from the full-size bike world, sort of like, are very cynical. They say, you know, I wouldn't be seen dead riding a circus bike.
Right.
Looking like a, you know, a bear on a clown bike.
Yeah.
So the image is so important, isn't it? You know, a bike's just like your clothes. You don't want to look like a prat, basically.
Yeah. that's true. That's actually my stigma. I feel people are staring if I ride a small wheeled bike and sort of pointing and laughing at me.
Yeah.
I just think I need to get over
it's
that.
It's like a full grown man on a child's bike. That's another negative connotation.
I just want to switch gears for a second and address green design, specifically, you know, something like the cradle-to-cradle ethos. What's your take on the whole green design thing?
I think it's really important. A lot of it is fairly common sense from a design point of view. As a designer, and I think all designers feel this, I have terrible angst. It could be argued that all designers are doing is creating landfill.
Yeah.
And that really pisses me off. And I really, you know, fight with my own conscience that, you know, wouldn't it be better for the world if designers just disappeared?
Right.
And, you know, there were no new products. You know, we just made products last a longer time and things like that. And I thought, well, no, because the whole reason we become designers is we want to make the world a better place by designing tools to make, make our existence better, if you're talking philosophically.
Right.
So the key thing is to make those tools long-lasting and hopefully not throwaway. And that applies to the, you know, the cheapest kitchen gadget through to, expensive bikes like this. You know, I design kitchen gadgets as well.
Yeah, and the one touch and the cutting board, I remember.
And it, funny enough, in the US, it is sort of, I think it's a sold on TV type product, so it looks a bit cheesy. But in Europe, it's sold as a sort of, you know, much more upmarket type product. And they really do last indefinitely. You know, they've been tested for literally thousands and thousands of cycles. So I think, and especially the rechargeable versions, they sort of just about tick the green box. I sort of balance that with inclusive design. The fact there are so many products that are designed for a specific subset of society to the exclusion of all the others. You know, for example, classic racing bike is designed for a young, fit guy.
Right.
You know, what about a bike for my mom, you know? You know, somebody who has got a stiff hip or things like that. So I find that sort of, you know, designing products which anybody can use, but also aren't stigmatized by looking like an old lady's bike or watch or whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going off topic a bit.
No. Continue.
I suppose what I'm saying is I'm trying to sort of justify the negative aspects of what designers do, like create landfill, with some of the more positive aspects. Yeah.
Do you think is sort of green design and trying to create sort of a closed circular system of design, production, manufacturing to how consumers use it and how they get rid of it, is that something you'd want to take more action and interest in, or it's just not something you're ready to go there just yet?
All the products I do, I try and design them for, A, long-lasting, that's the most important, so they don't actually ever need to be junked, you know. But secondly, if they are ever junked, that they could be, you know, dismantled and maybe recycled. But if I'm absolutely honest, the reality is that's way out of my control, and it's much more of a society thing.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. As a designer, to turn it full circle, I should be more active in persuading people to keep things, repair them, and make them last a bit longer. I mean, that's what I do personally, you know. I mean, I love repairing broken bits of kit. I can't stand throwing things out. Maybe because I just love fiddling with things, but I can't expect everybody else to do that.
Right.
Because the only area where I suppose I would be active is encouraging engineering. Because mm-hmm. I notice a lot of my sons and his friends just... the bike goes wrong, and they just don't know what to do. You know, they're just not used to repairing things. They're used to sticking them in the bin when they're broken.
Right,
and
exactly.
So trying to teach them, look, you can actually fix this. Look, see, take these screws out, comes apart. See, that's the bit that's broken. Let's see if we can fix it or replace it. And look, hey, it's going again.
Right.
And that's a sort of infusing about engineering. And making it sexy again, rather than it being sort of dirty fingernails and boring. I think you've got it better in the US, actually. In the UK, engineering is seen as something that nice people don't do. You know, it's a sort of grubby pastime for.
Really, I didn't know that.
Yeah. In the UK, and funny enough, on continental Europe, engineering has a much higher status. But in the UK, we've turned into a very much of a sort of service society where engineering, well, basically everybody, you know, the guy that repairs the washing machine,
right.
You call them engineer. The guy that empties the trash, he's a, you know, a trash engineer.
Oh,
so
I see,
the word is devalued in the UK.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not know that. Huh. So what are your design influences? What sort of makes you tick?
I love simplifying things to the absolute nth degree so that they fall down and then just adding one component back so it doesn't fall down.
Right.
I find it absolutely fascinating to try and make something function really well using the minimum number of parts. And I suppose I got into that because, you know, working for bigger companies, they said, look, you've got to get the price down, you've got to get the price down. that's always the mantra of any manufacturing company. Can you make it cheaper so we can make more profit?
Right.
And I actually found it quite fun to, rise to that challenge. And in particular, injection molding is a fantastic process because you're only basically limited by your imagination. You can make anything by injection molding as long as the plastic's strong enough.
Right.
And so it's a wonderful thing to stretch your mind around. I suppose apart from that, I just love, I really respect nature because, you know, you look at junctions on tree branches and things like that, and they're just optimized so beautifully for the load they take.
Yeah.
And so, you know, applying that sort of technique to things like bicycles and kitchen stuff is, I enjoy that.
That, to your point about nature is interesting because I just finished reading, I'm bad, I forgot what the book is called now, and I forgot who it's by, but he had a quote about the sort of beauty in, if you want to sort of be esoteric about it, the beauty of mechanical engineering of nature, like, and you use an example of a tree, you know, if you ask a designer to design something that can grow, that can provide a resource, that's sustainable, that can sequester carbon, that creates oxygen to sustain other types of life, you know, most designers will sort of be like, whoa, I can't do that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So
it gives you such respect for nature and you know, things like how, as far as folding things, you know, a fern plant and flowers, how they unfurl themselves from nothing.
Yeah.
You know, if we could do that in a, you know, make an organic product which grew itself and, you know, turned from, say, a folded bike into an unfolded bike organically, God, wonderful.
So do you ever look back on any of your work and wish you could redo some of the things? Are you a man with no regrets? And you're just sort of like, it's done.
Yeah, I mean, I got a great opportunity to re-look at the Strider bike when it went from, we were sort of in version two for years and years, and I didn't have much to do with it. And then an American guy bought the patents, and he said, right, we want it redesigning and improving. So that was a fantastic opportunity to go back and redesign something you did before. No, but apart from that, I mean, no regrets, really. I mean, I love getting a project as right as I think I can get it before handing it over, which pisses off factories like mad because they want it yesterday, you know.
Right. So is there something that you didn't design but you would love to have designed? And what is it?
Loads of things. I actually love the simplicity and the iconic factor. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but Stark's juicer.
Really?
Because the thing about that is, what's so clever about it is that A, it's a very distinctive design, etc., etc. But if you look at how the legs join onto the juicer part, they actually are facing down. So any juice that goes on them always runs down to the bottom tip. And so it works both, you know, engineeringly and aesthetically. Some of his other stuff is, you know, kettles that burn you and things like that. They're crap, but
right.
Juicer is good. But, where do I stop? I mean, all Apple products, just love them, you know. Again, Steve Jobs and his team, total perfectionists, and they have such vision. They're not following market forces. They're just sitting around and saying, right, you know, we know the technology. What's the coolest we can make here?
And right.
I respect that so much, you know.
So that sort of brings up another point. Do you ever see yourself doing, I don't know if you have, but have you done anything or would want to do anything with stuff that's, you know, like the iPhone or iPod? There's sort of more, I guess we call them electronics or gadgets.
No, I know my limitations. I think I like mechanical and structural stuff, you know, folding stuff. You know, the most electronics I'll ever go to is probably an electric motor,
right,
and a switch. Anything beyond that, one thing, it gets expensive. If you introduce electronics to a product, its price goes right up.
Oh, you know, I forgot to ask a question earlier, but actually, it's sort of out of context, so I'll just sort of drop it. Let's just go to your. I always ask everyone this question. It's or sort of like a question, sort of ridiculous, but what is your favorite color and why?
Blue, because I just love the contrast of this tiny dash of blue against black, which is the most prevalent color.
Blue, like a dark blue, or?
Yeah, ultramarine blue.
Oh,
a very vivid blue,
okay.
But only in a tiny little splash against black.
Interesting. Okay. And what about any current...
That's a good question.
It's what?
That's a good question, actually, yeah.
I asked another person what their favorite color was, and it was kind of... It was funny because everything that he creates was... he's a Japanese designer. Everything he creates is white. It's white, gray. It's within that family of colors. It's totally monochromatic. And he said his favorite color was pink or fuchsia, which kind of threw me off. And I'm like, I've never seen anything pink and fuchsia from you, but okay, that's interesting. So I find it like it's a cool way to find more about the designer.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Fascinating.
So,
you just answer from your gut, don't you?
Yeah. So, could you share with us any current or future projects that you may be working on now?
Let's see.
Secrets, because I love secrets.
Yeah, I'm sure. let's say I'm interested in fruit juice. That's something that I find fascinating. I'm interested in something that, because I make robotic things for opening jar lids and things like that, which involve a lot of little powered levers and a lot of force, right. All happening automatically and sequentially.
Right.
I'm playing around with, could this be applied to a fairly small folding bike? And it will be, I mean, this isn't giving anything away, but, you know, imagine something, say, a bit like a Brompton, which is a fantastically compact folding bike, you know?
Uh-huh.
And you just press, as you're putting your helmet on, you get off the train, you plonk the bike down, and as you're putting your helmet on and maybe, you know, adjusting your jacket or whatever, you
press. Oh, my God, it folds, it unfolds itself.
And this thing automatically sort of unfolds itself.
That would be amazing.
When you're all set down, it's ready to go. I would love to do that, you know?
Well, you should do it, Mark.
I've got some CAD drawings up, but it's you know, it's one of these things that's so easy to describe, but a hell of a lot harder to make.
And now that's perfect, because the question I was going to ask you earlier was about drawings, and since you mentioned drawings, now it's a perfect segue for it. When you work in design, are you a person who jumps to the computer and just sort of, you go at it, or are you still more of the classic designer? Well, it's not really classic, but, you know, the traditional designer where you start with pencil and paper and you just make loads of sketches first.
Loads of sketches first. I mean, I just fill pages and pages of sketches. But I have my computer on the whole time, and if there's something that I just can't work out in 2D on paper,
yeah,
I make a little CAD model of it in 3D, because, you know, you can visualize something in your head, but really to check it out, you need to make either a little model out of styrofoam or something, or, to be honest, it's quicker to make CAD something on the screen. But everything for me is driven by the piece of paper, because it's, for me, the paper is just like a dialogue with what I'm thinking about. You know, my brain doesn't have enough RAM capacity to be able to store all the little pictures, and so I have to use the paper as additional external RAM to get the ideas out of my brain.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, totally. It makes a lot of sense.
Also, it's such a lovely feeling sketching. You know, it's you could sketch all day and feel fresh as a daisy, but if you spend all day in front of a CAD screen, your life juices are sucked out of you. No, well, that's what I find anyway. The sucked out of me.
So, can you? A lot of Yanko Designs readers are students. So, do you have any wise sage words, or just, you know, words of advice for them? Because a lot of them now, you know, they're graduating or they're about to graduate, and they're sort of scared about going to the real world. They don't, especially the way the economy is. They're kind of feeling like, you know, the type of design that they sort of thought they wanted to do in school, in reality, that's not really how an ID works, you know, in the marketplace. So they're all sort of feeling a bit down. So what words of advice would you give to them?
I would say, go back to the original reasons they wanted to do design in the first place. And I would imagine, most people want to do design because they want to make the world a better place.
Right.
And they dream about making the world a better place. And so I would say dream, but then turn those dreams using your skills that you've got on your course into reality. And the key word there is reality, because it is so easy to kid ourselves as designers that the sketch in front of us, or more often the case, the CAD model in front of us, is reality. When it isn't, actually. Reality is when you can sit on it, if it's a chair, or hold it, if it's a knife or whatever, or ride it, if it's a bike.
Right.
And don't worry that first thing you crudely put together this first stage of reality is crude and ugly and horrible, because think of it just as a learning tool. It's only for you, just like the sketches are only for you.
Right.
That's the first thing. So dream and turn your dream into reality. What else? I would say follow your gut, really. Follow your gut as much as following what you're told to design. In other words, I think initially to be inspired in design, you need to have ownership of what you're working on, and so it has to come from you. And it's very easy to go down the route of thinking, oh, you know, my thoughts don't really matter because all this market research says it's got to do A, B, C, and D. And if you follow that sort of market research, you end up not really having much ownership in the design, and therefore you're not really bringing much to the, you're not really creating much, you're just synthesizing what other people want.
Mm-hmm.
So I would flick it around and say, dream and do what you really want, but then check back that it also ticks the boxes for what other people want as well.
Right.
It's actually ended at the same place, but the second way that I've just described gives you ownership in what you've done. And that's actually what, you know, what the guys at Apple do. You know, I happened to, one of my, when I used to teach at the ICA, one of my colleagues got headhunted to Apple. He won't be able to talk about it because they're not allowed to, but he's in one of the 13 industrial designers at Apple. And all I can get out of him about what they do there is the philosophy of what they do. And that's exactly the philosophy they follow. You know, they don't follow market research. They just work really closely with the technology and dream about what would be better.
That's
an incredibly long answer to a very short question.
No, it's fantastic. It's perfect advice. Perfect advice. I love it. Mark, thank you so much for speaking with us. I really appreciate it. And again, huge congrats and kudos on the IF Mode bike. It's beautiful, and I hope it's a huge, huge success.
Oh, thanks so much. You've asked some absolutely brilliant questions. You've had me walking around with the cell phone, you know, really excited. Really good questions. Great fun.
Thanks again, Mark, for taking the time out to speak with us. I really enjoyed this chat, and I wish you the best of luck. And please, please let me know of any future work that you may be working on. And for you guys out there who are interested in buying the bike, you can get it through areaware.com. Link will be included in the post. And if you do get the bike, please, please, please email me. Give me some feedback. Let me know what you think. Until then, guys, I will see you on our next episode. Bye.